This is The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Vanessa Finney. In the performing arts world, some American production companies have catered to deaf and blind audiences for at least several decades. Live interpretation with ASL, for example, that's American Sign Language, was first delivered on Broadway in 1980. And some venues welcome visually impaired patrons with accommodations like audio descriptions via headphones or braille versions of programs. Since then, accessibility efforts have expanded to include those with cognitive challenges or sensory sensitivities. There's one such performance coming up at Southern Oregon University. Dr. Jaron Jorgensen is the director of choral studies at SOU, where he leads both the concert choir and the chamber choir. I stopped by one of their rehearsals recently to ask him about the accessibility-themed event coming up on June 7th.
We will be presenting our final concert of the year, both the concert choir and the chamber choir, which is called Capable. And it is a concert whose repertoire readings will be centering topics that are related to issues of disabilities, of accessibility, and neurodiversity.
According to the American Psychological Association, the term neurodiversity refers to the diversity of all people, but it's often used in the context of autism and conditions like attention deficit disorder or dyslexia. I asked Dr. Jorgensen how those and other special conditions would be accommodated in this concert.
Neurodiversity is a large umbrella term, but specifically the ways that we will be breaching that topic with our repertoire is through a piece called Numbers, which is not necessarily intended to be used for this purpose, but it's a song where all the numbers seem like they're just spinning around in one's head. And I have someone close to me that lives with dyscalculia, which is dyslexia of numbers. And when she heard that song, she immediately said, "That is what it feels like to me when I suddenly see or have to memorize a bunch of numbers."
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
So we're doing that song to touch on that topic, as well as we'll be premiering a piece called Inside, which is by a composer named Amy Scuria. She is a composer who lives on the spectrum, and she has written this piece for us to premiere with the concert choir and the chamber choir that is from her own words, her perspective of being a female, a composer, a human being living and working on the spectrum.
In the process of producing this concert, what have you learned about people, be these students or other adults, that are living with these kind of invisible conditions and having to navigate the world?
Well, I think you just touched on it right there. I think there's a lot of folks that walk through their daily life with varying challenges and struggles that we may never even be aware of. And I've had a number of students or community members or even, quite frankly, other faculty and staff members that have come up and said, "I can't believe that you're doing a concert like this. You know, I was born with X, or my brother lives with this condition, et cetera." And they, I think, just feel that they're finally empowered through being able to share with their music a topic like this. That's not something that typically we do in a classical music setting.
So how common is it? I contacted the National Endowment for the Arts to ask their accessibility director, Beth Bienvenu. In an email, she told me that the practice has grown quite a bit over the last 10 to 15 years, as more and more arts venues and museums add sensory-friendly or so-called relaxed performances. This can mean separate events dedicated to this population, but many organizations also offer ways for audiences to adapt traditional events through aids like noise-canceling headphones, earplugs, sunglasses, quiet spaces, and even fidget devices. With that in mind, Bienvenu recommends that if an arts organization wants to offer accommodations like these, it should ask the neurodiverse people in their communities what features would be most useful. Then it's a matter of making sure the features are publicized to those communities. I asked Dr. Jorgensen about the features that would be used in the upcoming Capable concert. With your concert, there's sort of two components, at least, to it. There's the content or the repertoire, and also the format. So let's start with that. Tell me what it takes to structure a concert to be more accessible.
Yeah, I mean, we've been asking a lot of questions. I have been asking a lot of questions of myself about traditionally how do we format and structure our concerts, and are we really truly doing so that they're accessible to as wide and diverse of a population of people as possible? And the answer is resoundingly no. We do some things traditionally, but it's so clear that we can do a lot more. So just to name a few of the things that we're attempting to do that has nothing to do with the music, we will have Braille programs available for any member of the audience that reads Braille and would benefit from some assisted reading for the programs. We will have a live audio describer who will be speaking into a closed circuit system so that anyone who's blind or has visual challenges will still get a good understanding of what's happening on stage in front of them. We will have super titles for any spoken word as well as any of the texts of the songs that we're singing so that anyone who might have hearing challenges or maybe deaf can always see the text, as well as two interpretive signers that will be signing during the entire concert. And the choir, each choir will be learning one song with sign language as well. So we're trying really hard to just think about all the different touch points that we can insert into our concert logistically or structurally that'll make them as accessible as possible.
Okay, so would you say Southern Oregon University, like a lot of schools and performing arts organizations, they've made certain attempts, but a lot of this is new territory for them?
It is certainly new for me. I think it's new for a lot of us. And the idea, I suppose, isn't necessarily that every single event that we do, we will offer every single thing. But I think through the exploration and the learning that I have gone through of formatting or structuring rather this concert, I've learned just how far we have to go and what's possible. And I hope that our students, many of whom are going to be future music educators or music teachers, performers, will take a little bit of what they learned throughout this process and apply it into their future concerts and their future events.
Wonderful. Over the past 10 to 15 years, it seems this is gaining ground. You know, operas in San Francisco are offering for neurodivergent children who might just have to get up and run around during a performance or, you know, have difficulty with loud noises. Now let's get into some of the content. So tell me a little bit more about Inside, and then we'll hear a sample.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, Inside is by a composer, Amy Scuria. She is a composer that lives with autism spectrum disorder. And she, being a female, she was diagnosed with it late in life. And she has disclosed to me that that's quite common for women, that they tend to get diagnosed later. So they, as a result, don't always have the support services that their boy or male counterparts may have earlier in life. And so as she's really just coming to grips with her identity and how this diagnosis suddenly shines light on a number of things that she's always felt but never really quite was able to put a finger on, she was very eager to share that with her words. So it's not a poem. A lot of times when a composer is commissioned to write something, they usually will set a pre-existing text to a song, but she's writing out her own experiences in her own words and then manifesting that with an extra layer with her music. I think as the students and I have been working on it, it's been just a joy to watch it come to life. I hope that you would all agree, premiering a piece for me and supporting a living composer, it's like one of the greatest things to do.
Dr. Jorgensen, tell us about a couple of other pieces that will be at the Capable concert.
Yeah, so we will be, essentially, the concert's gonna be broken up into three sets. One set is gonna have either readings or songs that deal with hearing challenges, deafness, blindness, and visual challenges. We have another set of pieces that deal with neurodiversity, so the piece that you just heard, as well as that numbers piece, a reading, a poem about dyslexia that'll be read. And then the final set of the concert is a sort of an affirmation and comfort set, because I think there's been lately especially a real cultural awakening, social awakening of issues that are related to accessibility and neurodiversity, and that it's not always something that we have to fix or we have to cure, but that these conditions that individuals live with does not in any way, shape, or form reflect them as individuals or their ability to accomplish incredible, incredible things, despite perhaps having greater challenges than what maybe most of us might experience in our day-to-day lives. So just ending the concert with a message of affirmation and support. So another song that we're doing on the piece is by the concert choir. They're singing and signing with ASL a song called All Together We Are Love. That has that message of support and affirmation. And then this choir, the chamber choir, will be singing a song that was written back in 2018 by an American composer named Jake Runnestead, and it's called A Silence Haunts Me. And it was set, the text is inspired by Ludwig van Beethoven's famous Heiligenstadt Testament letter that he wrote during the middle period of his life, when he was really just coming to grips with the reality of his hearing that he was beginning to lose, and the ringing that it started with in his ears. It's a really deep and emotional piece, but then we see throughout the work that he comes out on the other side and he decides that his gift of music to the world is too great for him to allow his hearing challenges to prevent him from sharing that gift with the world. So it goes through a really emotional, intense arc, but comes out at the end of it hopeful.
What made you want to take on a project like this to begin with?
I had a student approach me last year when we did a concert regarding climate change, and they had indicated that for that concert we had a lot of projections and visual aids, texts printed in the programs and things like that. And they had just mentioned that they have a member of their family who's deaf, and that that particular person really enjoyed their experience of the concert because they felt like there were extra on-ramps for them to connect to the material and to the repertoire that the students were presenting than what traditionally might otherwise be provided in a concert. And it just immediately was like, okay, well, we need to run towards this and explore how we can do more of this in our concerts moving forward.
And how did you find the pieces?
Oh, through a lot of Googling. There are a couple pieces that are already on my radar. The one I just mentioned about Beethoven, that piece has been circling its way through the choral world a lot lately. But a lot of the other pieces, and for example, the piece that we're commissioning, it was, finding a composer whose experience I felt like I wanted to highlight and to allow them to use their music to share their experience with the world. So it's just a nearly year-long process planning a concert like this, far in advance, picking repertoire 1 month at a time.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with your performance. Guys, you're sounding wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks, Vanessa.
On the evening of June 7th, Dr. Jaron Jorgensen directs the Southern Oregon University Choirs and guest artists in Capable, a special all-ability concert focused on making the music as accessible as possible with live signing, audio transcription, and visual cues. You've been listening to The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. You can hear this segment on jeffexchange.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
69, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13,